I operated from a very scarcity-oriented mindset in my youth and sort of my early adulthood, where I wanted to earn as much as possible. I was focused on trying to get a high W-2 job. I wanted to be able to preserve resources. I was really frugal. I didn't spend frivolously. I wanted to try to save as much of my income as possible. When I was working at Equinox, I was saving 60.
Welcome to the Real Estate Law Podcast. Jason Muth here with Pride Away Stays and Straightforward Short-Term Rentals attorney Rory Gill. Rory, we are talking to somebody right in our backyard. We were just chit-chatting off camera. And, you know, the circles here are so small, right? Especially in the Northeast with the real estate investor community. You know, our guest today is actually a partner of a former guest on this podcast, and that was not planned. And, you know, in preparing for this episode, I realized that I am on multiple email lists for this gentleman along with his partners.
You know, as I'm preparing for today, I went through, you know, the past communications, and I see all the deal offerings that this guest was, you know, publicizing to his list, and I'm glad to be on it.
Yep. Yeah. So let's welcome Zach Gray to the podcast. Zach is a real estate investor here in Massachusetts. He works in Mass and South Carolina. I'm sure he's got some other stuff he's cooking up right now. He's also a gym owner. I can't wait to hear about that and how that factors into everything. According to your Instagram, you got 25 million in assets under management. I'm sure that number is going up, or maybe you need to adjust that. Welcome, Zach.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today, guys. I really appreciate you know, coming on and being able to share some of my experiences with you. You know, ultimately, I hope that, you know, some of the stuff that we talk about today provides some value to, you know, fellow listeners, and you know, excited to kind of dive into it.
So Zach's in his car. Are you outside your gym that you own?
I am.
You are? Yeah. I can see the kettlebell right there on your sweatshirt. If you're watching this, there you go. Gray's Anatomy. Where's Gray's Anatomy?
Gray's Anatomy is located in Needham, Mass. And there actually is some context to that and how that actually plays into, you know, my real estate career as well.
Yeah. Talk about that. Let's start there.
Yeah. So I have a very non-traditional path for most people. I went to undergrad for business. I actually enlisted in the military to be able to pay for school. I do not come from like a very well-off family. I enlisted in the military to help pay for school, so I did not have to incur student debt. I went to school for business and finance. During my entire time in which I was in school, I worked full-time and commuted. And then while working full time, I ended up getting certified as a personal trainer during my junior and senior year. I started my own personal training business when I was in college. And when I graduated college, I began applying for personal training, fitness related positions, as well as applying for finance business oriented positions. And I got a couple offers in both sectors. I ended up accepting a job working in kind of a luxury high end fitness facility in Chestnut Hill. For those of you who are not super familiar with like Boston Metro, Chestnut Hill is like a really affluent, high net worth earning, suburb of Boston. I chose that option because I felt like out of the options that were presented to me, I felt like it was the option that was going to help me get to earning close to six figures as soon as possible. And I basically felt like if I committed a year to this, that I would have the possibility of getting to a point where I could be earning six figures. And if it didn't work out, then I could always fall back on my degree and get a job in business or finance or something of the like. So I ended up working in the fitness industry. In the first year that I worked at this facility, I ended up getting to a point where I was earning, over six figures. And, you know, from that point forward, I just kind of hit the ground running and sort of took that in stride. I worked for that gym called Equinox for 4 years. I separated from them and then started running my own training facility. which now I own a 4,200 square foot gym located in Needham, Mass. And that's actually been super instrumental, one, in showing sort of like all of my clientele that I train personally and a lot of people that come to my training facility live in these metro markets outside of Boston that are very high income earning areas such as Newton, Needham, Wellesley, Westwood, Brookline. And these folks have all seen me go from working as sort of a laborer at, you know, a local gym to starting and running my own business with profound success. And I think that that has sort of ingrained in them not only my work ethic, but also my financial literacy, my business skills, and my ability to solve complex problems. And so during that time frame, I also simultaneously had gotten into investing in real estate. And, you know, every good real estate investor realizes that they're, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when they run out of money. And what I will say is that, you know, for me, I was able to get my first three deals under my belt using my own money. I executed with proficiency on those deals. And I essentially used my performance on those deals to map out projected, you know, prospective performances to some of my people that were in my immediate network in some of those high income earning areas. And I think that this also conveniently lined up with a time in which the stock market was trending down, interest rates were trending up, and, you know, the investing landscape was a little bit meek moving forward. So I used this opportunity to show my experience, show my credentials from my first few deals that I had done, and use that to leverage my network to be able to foster relationships with people in a different way, which was investing in real estate projects that I had interest in pursuing. And that sort of started this whole process, which has now transcended into being able to compile close to 200 units in like about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's fascinating, that transition right there, you know, from the gym into becoming an entrepreneur and, you know, a real estate investor with credibility with your clients, really is kind of what I heard right there. Was it intentional that when you joined the gym in Chestnut Hill, which, you know, we know Equinox is a very high-end gym, you know, memberships are expensive, you know, people take a lot of pride in working out there and saying they work out there. Was that intentional because you were going to be around more high net worth individuals that maybe you thought two steps ahead, that you could somehow network with these people with what you know, the way you really wanted to build wealth? Or did you join that gym in that role to become that six-figure earner? And then you had a revelation that, oh, okay, the people around me might be great to tap into if I could, you know, earn their trust on this other level as well.
Totally the latter. I operated from a standpoint of, I operated from a very scarcity-oriented mindset in my youth and sort of my early adulthood, where I wanted to earn as much as possible. I was focused on trying to get a high W-2 job. I wanted to be able to preserve resources. I was really frugal. I didn't spend frivolously. I wanted to try to save as much of my income as possible. When I was working at Equinox, I was saving 60% of my income, and that's post-tax. So with that being said, like, I was very adamant about building a sufficient nest egg to be able to create opportunities for myself and my family so that I would be able to, you know, prosper in the future. But also, I also looked at my employment and I said, yeah, it's great that I'm earning six figures. This is a great outcome. And there's going to come a time in which economic conditions are going to waver or going to be less desirable. And I do know and recognize that the services that I'm providing are probably one of the types of services that would be potentially on the chopping block as a luxury service in the event of hard economic times. So I need to build this security blanket to, you know, to insulate myself, but also I want to use this money in the future for, you know, other endeavors. And actually, I think in the beginning, I was really interested in kind of learning about the stock market, and I spent a lot of time trying to learn in that realm. Nothing that I learned really made a lot of sense to me in regards to like there being continuity or consistency amongst various investment options. And then once I started learning more about real estate, this was also the same time in which I started running my own business. And so the reason I actually grew my interest in real estate from inception was actually tax related. So I actually approached it from an angle of, I'm going to be running my own business now. The number one way for me to prosper, benefit, and grow this business, as well as grow my own financial, you know, standing, is to focus on how can I mitigate tax burden. And I think that was my predominant concern out the gate. And then once I started learning about real estate, and I was like, wait, real estate, you're able to earn returns that outperform the stock market. There's three income streams in terms of principal pay down, potential appreciation, and cash flow on the property. There's all these tax benefits, which juice the returns even further. And you also get the power of leverage. So I began learning about all this stuff, and I was like, this is a no-brainer. Like, this is the move. This is the only move. And that's what piqued my interest. And then it's just sort of been full send from there.
Yeah. Rory, wow. That story that Zach just told us is so intentional. And I can imagine that when COVID hit, you know, gyms were shut down, right? A lot of personal trainers didn't have any work. They're working when they're training people. You know, Rory, what did you hear there in that story that really stood out with how Zach was able to intentionally work his way into a great career path and then intentionally find his way to real estate investing and take advantage of all of the benefits of real estate investing beyond just buying a place and having cash flow?
Well, I mean, what you heard there, you're using the right word, intentionality, is what I heard as the theme throughout that story. And it started with the active income work too, sitting down and deciding, you know, what is the work that's going to allow me to hit this first goal first? And then, you know, implementing a 60% savings rate so that you can climb onto the next step. And, you know, everything that he did, at least in that story, seemed to have a purpose. There's a reason why it was going to happen, and there was a next step that it was going to lead to. Which I think counters the way a lot of people do it, you know, particularly people coming out of college. You want to get that first job and then see what happens from there. It sounds like every single step here had a financial intentionality behind it.
Yeah. You know, one of your partners was a guest on this podcast also, Zach. I mentioned it before we recorded, Matt Davis, one of our very, very first guests. And he was a great story. And he's also a hustler just like you. I hope you guys have had a good working relationship. I haven't had a chance to meet him just yet, but, you know, hopefully one of these meetups that we're all at, I'll meet the both of you in person. But there is a lot of commonality with your story and his story, where you kind of had this revelation, found your way to real estate investing, and how it actually is a pathway beyond just the W-2 job that you're earning. And the fact that you own a gym and that you're still training people tells me that you probably see the value in having multiple income streams, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, to that point, the way that I've structured my, you know, the way that I've, because I'm sort of in charge of running my own practice, I have a lot of control and flexibility over how I can manipulate my schedule to meet with the needs that are, you know, asked of me outside of that relative to my real estate related demands. And I think at this point I can, you know, it allows for me to gradually wean off of this, you know, insurance policy that is my day-to-day income. And, you know, that's sort of systematically been happening over the last like 2 years. Like effectively like 2 years ago, when we were just kind of getting started and we, you know, I only owned a couple of deals, I was working 6 days a week. I was working 12 to 14 hour days, 5 days a week, and then a half day on Saturday. And, you know, over time, we've now whittled that down to, you know, getting rid of weekends. Then we whittled it down to getting rid of afternoons, so I was only working in the morning. Then we whittled that down to now I work 4 mornings a week. And, you know, on those 4 days that I work per week, you know, I'm normally working from 5:30 a.m. to about 11:30 a.m. So even still, by 11:30 a.m., I'm done with training all my clientele. And if I can work 4 days a week from 5:30 to 11:30, and I can make enough money to be able to, you know, support myself as an insurance policy, worst case scenario, that is, that not only amplifies my ability to do deals for myself, but it also allows for me to be able to not have all my eggs in one basket, which is, you know, my properties or my real estate or my, you know, my, you know, JV partnerships with investors and things of that nature. So I think that's been huge. But as time has gone along, we've been able to whittle that time away to allow for us to really optimize our operations and our business for real estate. And I think that that's the area where we continuously have been improving. I think our operations are the key to why we have such success and why investors want to continue to invest with us. And I think we're excited because we just added a couple of new team members to our operation.
Mm-hmm. I have two more questions about this, about, you know, kind of mindset and how you grew into, you know, the position that you're in right now. Then I want to talk about some of the nitty gritty as to like what you're working on these days. The first question is, all right, trainers and people that are working kind of 1099 jobs, or they're working gig jobs, like where they have, you know, a full-time job and they're also a yoga instructor, or a full-time job and they're also, you know, training at a facility like yours. What do you say to those types of people, many of whom are listening to this podcast? A lot of people that listen are folks who really just want to get out of what they're doing or add to it. You know, you were one of them that did diversify. Like, do you see that with your peers, with other people that are in their 20s, 30s, you know, that are gung-ho on this one position, but we all know our bodies will break down at some point, or you won't have the energy or the stamina to maybe keep up with that level right now, and then you got to figure something else out. Like, what do you say to the people that you see around you?
What I would say to anybody who works in that space is your number one prerogative should be to learn the differences between an LLC and an S corp. I think your objective should be to understand the tax implications of running your own business and how to manipulate the tax benefits of running your own business to work in your favor towards paying for things like your car payment, your gas, you know, maybe if you're a yoga instructor, maybe your uniform that you choose to wear for your work, you know, things of that nature. I mean, your cell phone that you use for business. You know, there's a whole multitude of things, but effectively getting mindful about and intentional about how you're structuring your operation and viewing it as a business rather than as a side hustle, I think is number one, because I think you can save just a lot in tax implications there alone. I think that that's number one in terms of how are you able to preserve and save some of your own money. And I think that thereafter, I think that the next piece would be how fast are you able to get into a three unit or a 4 unit property with a low down payment loan option of 3 to 5%. To now put yourself in a position where you can rent out the remaining units and you can effectively live for free. I don't know about you, but the average monthly rental payment in Massachusetts right now for like a 1 to 2 bedroom apartment is somewhere above $2,000 to $2,500. That is equivalent to $25,000 to $30,000 a year of post-tax income. So that is equivalent to roughly about a $35,000 to $38,000 amount that you are saving from a salary. Now, what I want you to think about is, if I said to you, who would be willing to live in an apartment, right? Mm-hmm. That is, you know, has some other units in the same building, and it would result in you getting a $25,000 to $35,000 raise at your job. Mm-hmm. What's the likelihood that people would say, I'll do it? And this is where how I view the situation and my mindset towards the situation, which is every single person should be saying, now, if you're looking to buy a 4-family in Massachusetts, you might be spending, you know, 700 grand or so, 700, 800 grand, give or take. So 5% on that is, you know, 40 grand. So you got to save 40 grand to give yourself a $30,000 to $35,000 raise per year. It is, you are going to get the amount of money that you are going to make off of that in the long haul is astronomical. This is just counting you living for free. This isn't counting paying down the note. This isn't counting the tax benefits associated. This isn't counting the value of the property going up over time. This is just counting you living for free instead of paying rent somewhere else. So if I was a gig worker, I would be approaching it from, how can I treat this side hustle as a business? Number one. I think number two is, how fast can I save that 40-ish grand that it's going to take for me to be able to get to a point in which I can give myself a $30,000 to $35,000 a year raise? And I think when you're able to do that, what this does is this is like pushing a snowball down a hill. This is like you getting started towards having more income that you can use to create more opportunities for yourself. Whether you want to take that $30,000 to $35,000 a year and save it for another property, maybe you want to do that. Maybe you want to put that $30,000 to $35,000 a year towards hiring somebody to work in your business and then generate passive income through working for you. Maybe you want to take that money to scale your operation, have a bigger facility, right? That has a more desirable location to lure in new customers. There's plenty of ways in which you can approach this, but ultimately, that is the objective, is how can I get to that first step of living rent-free so that I can give myself that financial liberty to then go make moves elsewhere?
Yeah. Rory, that fundamental that Zach is talking about, even in today's higher interest rate environment and low inventory environment, that fundamental has been there since the dawn of real estate podcasts, right?
Yeah, I mean, the core opportunity for somebody getting started in the real estate space is the traditional multifamily, where you live in a unit and you use all the opportunities you have to start home ownership in there. It just takes that saving up that down payment, which is challenging for people. It takes sacrifices. But if you can get in on that first, particularly a first multifamily as a homeowner, it scales up from there. And it scales up from there relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Zach, let's talk about partnership and the people that you're working with. I've heard you talk about this elsewhere, but how did you find your way to Matt, for example, and Andrew and all your other partners? And what kind of advice do you have to people that are looking to do that first joint venture with other real estate investors?
If you're serious about building your real estate portfolio, the secret to you, the most impactful secret towards you building your real estate portfolio to the heights in which you want is one single word: collaboration. If you want to make moves, you need to collaborate. It's not optional. And the reason why I say this is that there's so many reasons behind why this is true. Number one, you have a finite amount of resources. You're going to run out of money. You need access to people in your network. So you're going to need to raise money for deals. Great. So you only have a finite network in which you can operate in, you can ask people in. That's number one. Number two is that you have strengths and you have weaknesses. If every single day you wake up and you have to participate in actions that are weak, that you are weak in, not only are those inefficient, but they also drain you of your energy. And what it comes down to is, this game is not about waking up and putting in a 12-hour day, and then tomorrow it's going to be all set in stone. You're going to be good to go. It's not about a year. It's not about 6 months. It's not about 2 years. What it's about is, it's a long-haul play. And in order for you to wake up and put in a relentless amount of effort every single day moving forward into this endeavor, you have to be doing things that don't empty your cup, that keep your cup full. So you have to figure out, what are the areas that I am successful at? What are the areas in which I bring value? And then what are all the areas that I am horrible at? Now you need to go find people that embody those characteristics so that you don't have to continuously suck energy out of your own self that diminishes your ability to make progress, and it slows down your velocity or pace of making progress. And then I think that once you find those people, they all have their own networks. They all have their own slew of people. They all have their own attorneys, their own commercial lenders, their own insurance brokers. They all have their own deal flow. They all have their own meetups that they're going to. They all have their own pre-standing relationships with people in the industry. And you take all of that and you pour it into one melting pot, and you got four groups of lenders and four groups of attorneys and four groups of insurance brokers and on and on and on down the line. Now what ends up happening is now every single time that a deal comes up in your network, it gets brought to the center of the table. And now what ends up happening is you find a good deal, I find a good deal, two other people find a good deal. Ultimately, you're going to get A, more deal flow. B, in order to do that deal, you're going to need less money because you're going to have access to more people who are willing to put in money. And lastly, to execute the project, you're going to need to do less work yourself because you're taking a small section of the work that you're doing. And the work that you're doing is the work that you want to be doing. So now the whole name of the game here is not to try to find one or two good deals, go raise all the capital, and keep all the resources for yourself. The objective is to pair up with people who are relentless, who are looking to move in the same direction as you with the same intensity and same work ethic, and you are looking to pair resources to get a smaller piece of a much, much, much larger pie. Mm-hmm. And when you have a larger pie and you're constantly bringing deals to market and you're constantly raising money and you're constantly showing proof of concept, that raises credibility. And this is where we use the analogy, rising tides lift all boats, where effectively the more deal flow you have and the more deals you're doing, the more proof of concept you show, the more that everybody in your network knows, starts to become aware of who you are. And then now they're like, damn, these guys are killing it. Like, we need to join forces with those guys. And so I could tell you firsthand, that's how that, you know, we're in a position now where we have people who are bringing us deals because we will equity stake them into a deal just for bringing us a deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this kind of comes back to, you're talking about how do you find your partners and so on and so forth. The biggest ROI on my time that I can receive imaginable is attending local real estate meetups. I have met my best lenders. I have met my attorney. I have met a multitude, probably 5-6 handfuls of contractors. I've met multiple partners. I've gotten multiple deals from going to meetups. There is not a better use of your time per month than to attend 3 or 4 meetups a month. Mm-hmm. And how impactful that will be towards answering some of the hard questions that you may have that you don't know the answer to. Because what I can guarantee is somebody's been there before and somebody probably has a proposed solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rory, good thing you're going to a meetup tonight.
Yeah, I sure am. And that's probably the best use of my time too for everything that I'm working on there. My key takeaway from this podcast is the concept of finding what you're good at and shedding the things that you're not so good at. It's not just an inefficient or suboptimal use of your time, but it's draining. It's undermining your work and it's preventing you from growing. So that's the advice that I'm taking to heart here. But I also think when you're conceptualizing a much bigger pie and, you know, there's a lot to go around for everybody and that's the incentive to partner up, I think that explains why your goals for the next year are relatively large and ambitious, because with that larger network of people and with those partnerships, you can do this. So tell us a little bit about what's coming next for you.
we went into the year and we actually backed into these goals, which are like, we said, okay, how many properties are we going to be refinancing? How much money are we going to be able to pull out? How much capital do we have in the pipeline right now? How much capital do we anticipate coming available relative to our investor network? We said, all right, based off the capital we're going to have access to, now let's add in our own funds. Great. This is what we got left. Okay. Now, based on the average price per unit of what we have now in our portfolio, how many units could we aim to buy? And we said, okay, we could aim to buy close to about 120 units. So how many, in order to get 120 units, what's our average number of units that we have per building right now? Great. So that means we're going to have to do one X number of deals per month now. So we need to do one or two or three deals a month. Okay. How many offers do I have to submit in order to get one to three accepted offers a month? Okay, so now we got to submit 10 to 30 offers a month. So now, per week, what does that break down to? That's 2 to 7 offers a week. So let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. So we backed into it. What I'll tell you is, I thought, I was looking at that. I left that meeting and I was like, it can't be done. I don't know how I'm going to be offering on 7 deals per week, 2 to 7 deals per week. And I'm like, I'm going to give it my all. We're going to go at this. We're going to see what happens. Mm-hmm. We are 2 months into the year. We're about to start March. And in January and February, we have 84 units under contract in the first 2 months of the year. So that puts us in a position where I feel really strong about being able to potentially meet our goals for 2024. And I think at this point, we have access to a significant amount of capital, and we're continuously looking to scale our portfolio. And so to this point, this is kind of one of the other points that I wanted to bring up, which is anybody who feel, we will cut them in 10% equity on any deal. We will cut anybody in 10% equity on any deal that we do. And they will not have to materially participate. They will not have to bring any money to the deal, and they will not have to operate the deal. They simply just have to bring the deal to us. And if we decide to move forward with it, they get 10% of the deal. So again, we're looking to partner with people. We're looking to collaborate. The phrase that we use is people at the bottom compete, and people at the top collaborate.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap it up with a final couple of questions, Rory, I want to throw it back to you and see if we could ask a legal question for people that maybe are hearing this saying, I want to be one of those guys that invests in a group like this. What should that person be thinking in terms of both protection for themselves personally and for any of the partnerships that they're doing?
You want to have the conversation with your partners and put everything on the table ahead of time. Attorneys and other people can kind of help you structure the actual agreements that you get to, but having that, and they can structure the conversation too, but having that conversation and setting the right expectations, the division of labor, the division of responsibilities, who's going to contribute what happens when these different nightmare situations happen, what happens if the project is wildly successful, what happens if it's wildly unsuccessful, but have those conversations and talk through those things, and attorneys will help put that into writing. But that is, having that conversation is going to not only protect you in case there's a trouble with the partnership in the future, but it's going to help get the partnership working together more efficiently if you've gone through the exercise of talking through things, setting expectations, and building trust.
Right. Why don't we wrap it up with the final couple of questions we ask of all of our guests, Zach, just to get to know you a little bit better and to hear what you have to say in comparison to everyone else that's answered these same three questions. First one, if you can get on stage for half an hour and talk about any subject in the world, which I know that you've done, but with zero preparation, what would that be?
The power of multifamily investing and its ability to create financial independence for any person in this country, regardless of where you're starting from.
Mm-hmm. And quick follow-up, how long ago were you able to have that conversation? Like, at what point, was it 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that you couldn't have had it? But then when did you learn that you could?
I probably couldn't have, 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Wow. Yeah. See, that's what's remarkable is how quickly this can happen. If someone really sets your mind to something, meets the right people, puts themselves in the right room and really takes some action, it could happen so quickly as 3 years. Think back to 3 years ago. We were in the heart of the pandemic, a year into it. And, think about where you were in your life. That's where Zach was. And he trained himself to learn this. Second question. Tell us something happened early in your life or career that impacts the way you're working today.
Yeah. I point back to probably my time in the military. And what I would say is there are many times in my experience in the military in which I was outside in 35 or below in suboptimal clothing, where it was raining, I'm carrying a metal weapon that is basically making it so I can't feel my hands. And I think back to those moments and moments like those where this is happening at 7 or 8 a.m. in the morning, and you're realizing this is what my life is going to be for the next 12 hours. Enduring that and realizing how much that sucks and how little say you have and how uncomfortable that is, it puts me in a perspective now where I get to wake up in my nice comfy bed in a heated house. I get to walk out and I get to cook myself breakfast when I want. I get to eat what I want, when I want. I get to decide when I start my work. I get to stop my work when I want. I get to spend time with people when I want. Like, I look at the challenges that exist in day-to-day life and say, is this really difficult relative to some of these other things that I've had to encounter? And I think that when you put things in perspective to that degree, where you're forced to do something and you don't have a choice, I think that your ability to persevere and overcome some of the challenges of, the stress that you deal with at this point start to appear as, sorry.
It's all right.
They start to appear as being a lot less significant and a lot less impactful.
Yep. Very well said. Final question we have, tell us something you're listening to or watching or reading these days.
Something I'm reading. One of the books that I've been reading recently is called Dare to Lead. I think it's a Brené Brown book. Mm-hmm. I think that I've gotten to a point now where I have, we're starting to build out a formal team. We have multiple people who have joined our network who are going to be working on projects with us. And I think it starts to become really impactful to be able to manage multiple different personalities, multiple people that have different work styles and communication strategies. And I think it becomes really important to understand what it means to lead another group of people and, how to improve your communication style and how to temper yourself to be able to like put people in, put yourself in other people's shoes and things of that nature. So
if you're in the Needham area, want a good workout, Grey's Anatomy Academy, I'm sure Zach will hook you up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, come on and coming down anytime.
If you want to learn more about Zach also, I know that you run the Simplify Meetup in New Bedford, Massachusetts, correct?
That's right.
Which I believe is a monthly meetup, right?
Yep. First Wednesday of every month.
And online, if you want to learn more about you, what should people do?
Reach out to me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @the1099mindset. Mm-hmm. So reach out to me there. And you can also join our newsletter to see all the deals that we're doing. And we also put out, you know, deals that we wholesale. We also put out off-market deals that we're selling. We also put out a fair amount of investor tips, as well as provide opportunities for people to invest in deals that we're going to be doing. So it's a lot of insight into our operation that could be valuable, whether you're a fellow investor who might learn from, you know, seeing somebody else's operation, or you're somebody who's looking to, you know, invest passively. Any of those would be advantageous for you.
All right. We will link that up in the show notes along with Rory. Where can people find you?
You just go to rorygill.com. You'll find the different ways that we can connect and the different ways I can help you out.
All right. If you've enjoyed the episode, we really love 5-star reviews. We love it if you subscribe to the podcast, either on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this. If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, you can go to realestatelawpodcast.com, find out all the information about how to tell us about you, and we'll get back to you. Zach, we can't wait to see you in person somewhere in all of our travels around the meetup world here in Massachusetts. Thanks so much for your time today. Rory, thank you as always. And thank you for listening or watching. We really appreciate it. We will see you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.